When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hi, and welcome to Pattern Portraits, an artwork and podcast by me, Lauren Godfrey. Each episode, I speak with a fellow pattern lover in the creative industries about their relationship to pattern and colour, and how surrounding themselves with pattern serves as a kind of armour. Each guest has selected some textiles special to them, which we will discuss, using the patterns to delve into their stories. I've also created an accompanying artwork, an abstract pattern portrait of the sitter through their patterns made from jesmonite inlaid with perspex and brass, and a resulting print will be available to purchase. There'll be an exhibition of all the artworks, and the prints are available on my website, laurengodfrey.co.uk. Follow Lauren Godfrey Studio and Pattern Portraits Podcast on Instagram to stay in the loop. Hello, and welcome to Pattern Portraits. Today I'm chatting with Gemma Kearney, a broadcaster and presenter known for her work with BBC Radio and a myriad of TV appearances, from hosting Glastonbury for the BBC to presenting the public art competition show Landmark for Sky Arts. Gemma is a published author with another book coming out imminently called The Immortal Sisterhood. Gemma is deeply and passionately involved in the art world. She's on the board of Jupiter Artland Foundation and the Edinburgh Art Festival, helping steer the ship of exciting art in Scotland and beyond. Gemma has a truly joyful approach to dressing, always appearing in fabulously playful patterns and colours, often sourced from independent designers and sustainable brands. I've long admired her buoyant presence on my screen and in my ears, so it's my absolute pleasure to chat pattern, colour and life with her today. Welcome, Gemma, to Pattern Portraits.
Oh, thank you. What a lovely introduction.
It's so nice to have you here. I start every interview by asking, what does pattern mean to you?
Pattern equals codes, equals a part of communication that I appreciate and respect probably more than ever. I don't know how to describe my mind, but I do know that it's very visually led. And that pattern can sometimes really help me express myself so that I don't have to articulate it.
Totally. It's sort of the first port of call.
Yes, I think so. I think, I'm surrounded in what some would describe as busyness. What I see in my eyes really genuinely makes me feel happy and inspired. And a lot of that is colour and pattern.
Mm.
I've been researching different kind of coding within texture and craft, specifically with the writing of this new book. And I'm living in Scotland, so I'm surrounded in tartan. I'm literally speaking to you with a tartan blanket around my arms, and not just for show, it's for warmth. And there is something almost magical about pattern. There just is. And then when you look into how a lot of it is configured, cultivated, made, designed, it becomes more and more and more intriguing.
Mm.
And I think I appreciate that on some kind of meditative level, let's say, like I said, more than ever. I don't know if it's because of the nature of research. I don't know whether I sort of have this feeling that texture, pattern, code, design is a way of telling a history, but in a more secretive way. I think we're in a space and a time where so much is so explicit.
Right.
And the English language so dominant, entwined with capitalism, so loud, so brash, that bizarrely pattern can present or offer an alternative to that.
Mm, that's really beautiful. Yeah, this idea of it having a type of language built into the processes and the making of it, I think is really nice. And as you say about unraveling the threads and understanding the processes, it gives it a kind of pace. I think often when you think about the way like a tartan weave is built up and sort of the time it takes, I mean, whether it's a machine or a human doing that, it's got an inbuilt pace to it, which I think is profound and quite beautiful.
There's so many different ways of describing this, and it is a movement, it's a convergence, and it's, I love the way that you describe it as pace, because I think there is really something in that from our human experience, and it's kind of a vibration, which is like very much a language connotated with being a space cadet or a hippie, but I do think that there is something about object and also pattern. We're talking about pattern specifically, but if we're talking about, for example, this blanket around me, it represents so much, and what the actual pattern might tell could be the story of a clan. You know, I was reading a book about tartan specifically, and it was describing the songs and chants sung in the factories when people were first starting to create the codes in tartan and tweed. And there would be groups of women on the Scottish Isles, particularly with tweed, singing to who the item would end up on.
Wow.
Almost like a good luck spell.
Kind of imbuing it with that charm.
Absolutely. And I think that this pace, this feeling, this vibration, however we want to describe it, whatever resonates, it does feel very real and very tangible and understandable. And it does transcend language, which is something that is so interesting to me, perhaps because I am deep into the weeds of writing. I'm really in my own head. But at the same time, my everyday life is full of colour.
Yeah.
And it is full of musicality. And it seems that the women that I'm writing about in The Immortal Sisterhood had all of these, like, multitudes too. The magic, the codes, the survival, the storytelling. But then at the same time, a boldness somehow.
Tell me more about The Immortal Sisterhood.
So The Immortal Sisterhood began as a collection of love letters, really, to incredible women that had sparked my imagination, that I felt weirdly ashamed to not necessarily know about or to have researched enough to really know parts of their essence that resonated with me as a human, because I look to the stories of women and those of us who identify as this gender almighty and complicated and so special, and it's been such a beautiful journey. It's become way more than love letters and history. It's become this kind of formless historical patchwork of looking at certain women's lives and choices and then finding how it relates to some of mine or some of the ways that I've felt or been treated or what I've experienced, because I do think that we're all connected, and I think that there is something really special about celebrating our interconnections throughout time, because many of these women are no longer living, but at the same time have such stories to tell.
And who are some of the women? Are you able to reveal them, or is that a surprise for when the book comes out?
There's 12 women, and the one from longest ago is Pharaoh Hatshepsut, who was, in short, a genderless queen in ancient Egypt, ancient Kemet, as it was called at the time. Who was incredible in terms of having a really architectural mind, and was nearly written out of history because her tomb was completely destroyed. And it goes all the way through from Betty Davis, who is mostly known from being married to Miles Davis, but was a funk artist in her own right. Pamela Coleman Smith, who was an incredible artist and storyteller and occultist, who was such an ambiguous character that no one really knew like where she was from, having spent time in Jamaica as a child and had this kind of vibe and look that people used to describe in letters and in essays or articles as really quite odd and weird, and no one ever really seemed to get her. She also created the 78 tarot cards that a lot of people still use, but they were printed under the name of the person that printed them, who was a man. So they're known as the Rider-Waite cards, but a lot of people use them and don't know that they were actually illustrated by Pamela Coleman Smith, and they're really special.
Wow.
All the way through to Grace Jones. So we've got a real wide
mix.
The web of the sisterhood is so special to me, and I feel like I've made 12 new friends, which is quite
so
strange but really in on other days very, very cool.
Oh, it's lovely. I love the idea of love letters as a kind of manifesto for being, and sort of I've tried to make artworks as love letters before, and it feels like it comes from a really generous and genuine place. You're sort of bearing your, it's embarrassing, a love letter somehow. You're bearing your soul, but you're kind of letting it all pour out and without any filter. And I think that's actually a really generous thing for you to do, to sort of articulate that.
I think I am embarrassing. I think I always have been, because I'm not that embarrassed very easily. And I am seriously a lover. So I love hugely. I love life. I love beautiful aspects of nature. I love the nature of living. I love brilliant humans. I really do love. In fact, one of the women that I'm writing about is Audre Lorde, who a lot of people know and reference often. But this is from a specific space of just being engulfed by one of her essays, which talks about living in the erotic and having a lens on life that doesn't just see eroticism as something sexual, but that actually enjoys the pleasure of living, whether it's watching a rose in your garden bloom or wearing your favorite dress or writing a love letter to your lover, like all of these things can be so beautifully erotic. And I think that you probably need to not be embarrassed easily to really embrace that as a state of being.
I think some people who don't wear a lot of pattern could see colourful dressing as something that could be quite embarrassing because it's a very attention-seeking type of thing to do. But I think, as you say about this eroticism or the kind of empowerment that it gives you, is actually like so addictive that it sort of outweighs any potential embarrassment for me. I don't know if that's how you feel.
I've always had this obsession with expressing myself through clothing. I've never been afraid of anything that could be deemed as weird. If anything, I probably have been too into the idea of wearing the weirdest outfit in the room at points. And I ask myself whether that is something that I regret, you know, when you look back at like hashtag wardrobe fails, or I find it empowering. And I actually think I overall find these moments empowering. Just this kind of idea of being embarrassed by clothes. I think as people, it's really helpful to analyze that critically and unburden ourselves with the fact that we should feel shame somehow.
Totally.
Having fun with outfits.
Yeah. I mean it's totally a patriarchal squash mechanism, isn't it? It's like, well, this person's coming a bit out of the box that they're supposed to be in. They don't look feminine or pretty as we expect them to. They look a bit weird and wild, and we can't categorize that. And I think that's what the Daily Mail or whatever it is that's shaming people, that's what they're doing. They're saying you're not fitting our idea of what you're supposed to look like. And there's something great about sticking two fingers up to that.
Like, there's outfits that I've worn on the red carpet or to public events that for weeks afterwards I shuddered because I regretted it, because perhaps it wasn't photographed well, or it was actually really uncomfortable and I'd only tried it on once before I wore it, and it didn't make me feel very good during an evening of eating and drinking or whatever. And it's such an interesting relationship, but it's an important relationship with clothes. And recently I looked back at an outfit that had been slated. It was in some sort of fashion fail column in a tabloid after an award ceremony. It's from years ago, and my outfit was described as the color of mildew, so like mold, and it was green velvet, like olive green almost, high-necked mini with long sleeves. And I remember feeling really embarrassed and not happy with the fact that it was described as mildew, but I looked back at it recently and I really like it. And my hair was fiery red. And I sort of looked like Little Marty from the Moomins.
I was wearing
fishnets and purple shoes. It's kind of a mixture between Tinkerbell and Little Marty and me. And for me, actually, I am empowered and proud of this mashup of surrealist references that I actually have inside of me. And it's never been linear, conventional, or pretty. I'm of mixed heritage. I've traveled, I've had ups and I've had downs, and I love color and freedom, and I'm really happy to wear that on my skin.
I feel like the description of mildew seems like it should be an insult, but it's actually quite articulate. It's like,
I know,
I can imagine exactly the color and I don't hate it.
I know, it was kind of quite strange for a tabloid to be like describing my outfit as the color of mildew, because you're right, it was articulate. And it, I don't know, I feel like I often provoke this kind of opening of a third eye. that makes people either afraid or annoyed, particularly when I cover very, very mainstream spaces. I can't be categorized.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is a risk, you know, but it's risky to be a woman, and it's risky to be a black woman, and it's risky to be a black alternative woman, and it's now risky to be a woman of nearly 40, you know. Mm-hmm. There's all these risks, and it's a place that I at this point in life feel actually really excited about.
And where do you get the strength from to kind of combat those risks? Like, does clothes act as your armor for that?
Definitely sometimes. Clothes act as armor. So much acts as armor for me, but clothes are such a huge part of that. And I think they always have been, in a way that hasn't always been conscious.
Yeah.
I've had the pure pleasure and luxury and privilege to think about that through the written word, through podcasts like this, through having friends who are fashion historians or designers. It gives me the opportunity to be more analytical.
Yeah.
But when I was 7 and insistent on buying this really ridiculous tea cozy fluffy green hat at the jumble sale, that my mum was just like, it's awful. And for me, it was just the most bulbous, weirdest, coziest, mushroomy thing that I wanted to put on my head and wear in South London, where we were living at the time. It was armour, but I didn't realise that then.
And having strong instincts and following them.
Yeah, I am very instinct-led, and for better or for worse.
Yeah. Tell me about this first fabric, the dress.
Ah, yes. Oh my God, I love this dress.
It's so great.
So I was making a documentary for Radio 4 called The Sound Odyssey. There's a series, a couple of series actually, where we took British musicians, quote unquote, so people that live and are based in the UK, to different parts of the world to collaborate and make a piece of music with local musicians. And I was with Koji Radical, who's an awesome lyricist, rapper, artist. He's such an incredible polymath. And we were in Ghana, which is where his heritage goes to, and he hadn't been to Ghana for years, where both his parents were from. And we were just having an absolute ball, and he was making this piece of music and with local musicians, and we were just up. Everything was so vibrant about this particular trip. And I was in Ghana. It was my first time I'd been there. And I felt really delighted, actually, because there was just this incredible experience of being only 6 hours away from the UK. Like, I got on the plane, it was snowing back home, and I was in beautiful West African sunshine around beats and rhythms. And I felt so lucky to do the job that I do. And we were driving down a street, we were in Accra, and there was a market stall with this particular dress just literally like kind of dancing in the wind. And I was like, stop the car! And everyone was like, what? We're working. And I said, I need a minute and I need the dress that I've just seen. And I bought it straight away, and it's bright yellow. It's kind of got this incredible print. I don't even know how to describe the print. Can you?
Yeah, it's like kind of crescent moons or smiles in kind of red outlined with black. And then it's got a sort of almost like a fish scale in the background on the yellow, also in a kind of black line. But I mean, it brings me joy just to look at it, because I can find little smiley faces in there and little kind of, it feels happy and joyful. It just in its almost like the subliminal messaging of a smile.
That's so nice. That's what I mean about the coding, these codes everywhere.
Totally.
And actually, if you're wearing smiles, people smile at you.
Yeah.
And I love the fit of it. It's got this ruching all around the top part so that you can play with it and it melds to your body you know, wherever your body might be at. And it's just a really happy, you could tell that it's from the motherland. And my eyes are so happy whenever I'm on the continent of Africa. Like, honestly, I just feel like home and nature and joy and blackness and so much special stuff is just everywhere, in craft form, in laughter form, in just, there is such activity. And that is very much in the colour of the fabrics.
Yeah.
And I love that yellow dress. I really urge people to have a look at the pictures as well as listen to the podcast, because it's a good dress.
Yeah, I'll post all the pictures on Instagram. And it's actually quite nice, I think, to describe something and someone to imagine it and then get to see it. There's a sort of nice delay that happens in that moment where you're sort of like, I wonder what that's like, and your imagination fills in the gaps too.
I love that.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So tell me about your next fabric.
I love this scarf. This next fabric and pattern is a scarf which I actually bought, funnily enough, on the continent of Africa, seeing as we're talking about the motherland. In the east of Africa this time, I was in Ethiopia. And I, at the time, was doing quite a lot of research work and ambassadorial work for Oxfam quite a few years ago. And I wanted to document a particular initiative that they were working on at the time, which empowered women in rural communities through creating unions and teaching women particular skills that you could do in places that might not have electricity or the same infrastructure that we do. And I met with female beekeepers making honey and becoming part of the honey trade, some of which in quite a big way, actually, and really becoming quite successful. And it was an amazing trip. It really was. This was one of my first few trips to Africa, and definitely my first trip to Ethiopia. And it's sometimes hard to express how much these moments that I feel so lucky to have had, like, imprint themselves in my inner world and my philosophies, because they're just so unique and so special, I think. Yeah. And meeting with other women making honey, which is also just so compelling as a thing and tasty.
Yeah, it's such
delicious.
A collaboration.
Definitely. And I was like, meeting women who were so skilled that they could just cover their arm and whilst putting their hands like into beehives and having like a newborn child like on the breast, like with the other arm. Honestly, it was majestic as an experience.
Yeah.
And we went to a market one day and I loved the formation of colour, the kind of historical context of Ethiopia. Ethiopia is one of the African countries that was never colonized. So there is such rich history, and it all comes out in the architecture, in the food, in the dance, in the traditional song, and in the dress. And I bought this scarf, which is made up of loads of different colors. It's white or just off-white, most of the color, but then each end of the scarf has a series of stripes. But the way that the stripes are formed is kind of varying vertical stripes in width. And you've got a fluorescent orange in there, like a bright pink. And I know, it's just so appealing to look at. I love it.
They're like properly kind of rave colours. Like they're really vibrant.
Completely. Rave colours from the market in northern Ethiopia, in Bahadir. It's just a great scarf. Like it's thick. It's like a sort of big scarf that I can wrap around my head. I can wrap around my neck. I can wear it in different weathers because it is cotton, but it's also thick. So it works in warmer climes. And it works when it gets cold. And I really love that scarf.
Travel is obviously a huge part of your world, and also like a pull to a certain location. So I have the sense that when you lived in Margate, for example, you were so in Margate. You kind of were like really deeply entrenched in that world and swam every day at the tidal pool and had this kind of real rich relationship to that land. And now I feel like you're in Edinburgh, you're fully arrived in Edinburgh. You're kind of you've involved yourself in every aspect of the particular place. And there's something really nice about the way that it's almost like you kind of gathering connections and stories in the places that you visit, and these items so are so linked to place.
I can't help it. It could be described as a search for identity, but I know it to be more than that, because I actually think that our identities are such a mush and swirl of things that we remember and things that were before us, and then also like a deep implanted hope for bright futures. And also it just takes away a reliance on anything too material. So even though we're talking about things and we're talking about trips, but it's so much more. It's about the legacy of cultures outside of me. It is in the duty I feel to tell the stories, and it's in the changing kind of climate and environment that I feel safe to live in, move to, and grow in. And I think that we all should be allowed to kind of have this sense of movement and to actually do it, you know, physically, like to move to places, to consider a world without borders. It keeps me outside of a binary that makes me feel really free. And it's a lot to do with place, and it's a lot to do with nature, and it's a lot to do with this idea of Mother Earth, really. It's almost like other. It's like an ethereal sense of the mothership, Mother Earth, like the mother line, like and to me all these things are quite like divine. I feel really, really thankful for. And it connects us. It's like it is. I do immerse myself into space, and I create these like quite romantic relationships with honey. with water, with tartan. And it's all to do with my experiences, the experiences that I'm invited to learn about, kind of cracking the codes that are for me, you know, like what is my toolkit of self-care or knowledge. And it's because I don't necessarily feel like convention or the structures have me in mind or right. had me in mind when designed. Mm. So therefore I have to cultivate my own ecosystem or ecology, and it's so much to do with the buildings around me or the
blankets around you.
Yeah. Or I don't know, like I've got a shop space in my area in Edinburgh and everybody wants to know what it is and I don't know yet.
Right.
Which could be stupid or it could be exciting, but for me it is the latter. And it's again, it's about thinking independently. I love to question and I like things to be journey based.
So I love the idea of beginning a shop but not quite knowing where it's going.
It's quite funny. Like people ask me in the street, like, Gemma, what's going on with your place? And I'm like, I don't know, but it's part reading room, part writer's room, part events. On Saturday, we're doing a clothes sale. Last Saturday, we did a somatic movement workshop in there. Like, it could be so many things.
Yeah, it's sort of a hub.
Exploration. Yes. I do feel like Dora the Explorer sometimes. I joke, I'll pack my backpack and off I go. And it's probably one of my most favourite things to do, or my sense of self that feels most kind of me when I am just like exploring.
There was something you said about the idea that you have a kind of urge to tell certain stories, or kind of stories that you're bound to tell. And I really like thinking about how clothes are sort of like a little ticket to be asked about a particular story. So if you wear the scarf from Ethiopia, someone's bound to say, God, I love your scarf. And then it gives you license to say, well, I went to this place and it was amazing and this is what I found. And I think that clothes and pattern in particular has such potential to spark conversation. But not only that, it's sort of like, it's like you're wearing a kind of an index or glossary to you. And those things are like, ask me about this and I'll tell you about that. It's kind of,
I love that.
It's got a lovely potential.
It's a dot to dot, isn't it, of our stories.
Yeah, and sometimes those things kind of come together. So then you're drawing this dot to dot between, I don't know if you ever wear that scarf with the Ghanaian dress, but there's something, then you're kind of drawing this line across the map that has such beauty to it, that it's like those things haven't been paired before, maybe. But
I'm going to wear them together now. I have this yearn to have more space. I have a decent amount of space and I feel really lucky for that. But I would love to have an area, you know, with all the setup to be able to archive and protect or even repair, you know, like so many garments that I have. I've got an idea called the Fashion Hospital, actually, which I really would like to do, maybe as a tele project. This is something I think could be really fun on a mainstream level, which would be like the repair shop, but for clothing. Yes. So that detail, that intricate, almost with the opportunity to, I was calling it tattooing clothes, you know, like stains that you're really ashamed of on beautiful garments. Like, don't be sad anymore. Like, why not get somebody who's a skilled embroiderer to tattoo over that stain?
That's a really nice idea. I'm thinking of a dress that I've got that's like a harlequin black and white dress of vintage one I bought in Paris, and it's got the worst period stain.
Oh god.
It's so sad because I love it. But maybe the whole bum
please
could
bring
just
it
become
to the fashion hospital. And we are going to reclaim this menstruative moment. I don't even know if that's a word, but I've just created it.
Yeah.
And we are going to tattoo into, I don't know, we could create a beautiful lily or something. What would you like? What would you like to have embroidered in that, in the space of that period?
Probably something quite bold. I don't know. Probably, I'm imagining like a sort of icon of mid-century modern furniture.
Oh, yes!
Is that allowed? A chair,
yes,
a chair, maybe like a Rietveld chair on my bum.
Oh my god! You know what? In certain circles, that is gonna go down like a house on fire.
And then I'd always have somewhere to sit.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Like all of the furniture bods out there, put your hands in the air. Yeah.
Oh, great. Well, I'm definitely first in line for the fashion hospital.
Yeah, this is good because I just think we can always work with these materials and textures and actually pattern, like collaging. Mm. My literary agent came, she's a mate of mine as well. She came to stay with me the other day. And as a kind of giant metaphor of love and encouragement, she got us to watch How to Make an American Quilt.
Oh.
With Winona Ryder and Maya Angelou, and it was the perfect metaphor because it just released this sense that I have to be doing it all alone, and that expression has to be done in a particular way. Like the quilting metaphor became momentously like really helpful for me, that it takes many hands to like make a quilt, and it can be an act of resistance to kind of cut up and use things that have been discarded or pre-loved and positioned in a new way. And I would really like for us all to be doing that like together, like more.
That's beautiful. Yeah, really nice.
Definitely would recommend a watch.
Nice, I'll hunt it down. Let's talk about another of your patterns. Should we talk about the crochet items?
Yeah, so the crochet is a mix of stuff. I sort of realised when gathering garments for this podcast that I have a real thing for crochet. And I haven't thought about it really before. I know my mum used to crochet in the 70s. I used to sort of think that was quite cool and glamorous. It's somehow connected to Jamaican culture, which I'm not sure why. My mum's the Scottish side, actually. I'm Scottish Jamaican, but just doing lots of research and residing in the places where I'm from, which is actually everywhere. I did my DNA recently and I'm from everywhere. but going back to crochet as an act, like I found that bikini top in the Pan-African colors, in the red, green and yellow, on a beach in Jamaica, and I had to have it.
Nice.
And I was re-listening to my Grace Jones interview, which is part of the Ledge Society series.
Right.
In it, she talks to me about how she used to do crocheting simultaneously to weightlifting.
Nice.
While spending long periods in Jamaica on the island, yeah. I mean, not exactly at the same time, but she was talking about pastimes to me and brought up both of them. But I need to know like more. I just know that you can find crochet pieces held in quite high esteem in the Caribbean, and that I've always been attracted to crochet. Maybe it's because it takes a long time and it's so beautifully crafted.
Yeah.
It sparks my imagination somehow.
You don't need much equipment in a similar way to knitting. It's sort of it's not like you need a huge loom or a printing bed or something. You can kind of create patterns and shapes quite well. I've actually never crocheted, but as I understand, it sort of all happens in quite a small space.
Cool though, isn't it? Isn't it amazing that you can make all of these different patterns and bring together all these colours and
it's
make
so
a bikini?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. The bikini's amazing. Is the black and yellow sort of bee coloured, is that a top as well?
Yeah, so this is a Katie Jones piece, and she is quite a notorious crocheter. She's very, very, she's so talented and really combined fashion with crochet, has done for a long time. So I had been a fan of her work for ages. And then when my last book came out, which is 6 years ago now, in 2017, Open, A Toolkit for How Magic and Messed Up Life Can Be, I did what I do, I've decided. I could describe it as going mad, but it's not. It's just like this enthusiasm firework that I have when I've worked so hard on something. So I bought a double-decker yellow bus.
As you do.
I think inspired by the Spice Girls movie, but oh. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, I don't blame out,
like everybody kind of wants a bus, and I did, and I did, and I, you know, spent my entire advance on it. So there we go. But I also just started to galvanize makers and thinkers to respond to certain elements of the book, because the book, in fact, is a huge ode to visual color pattern, because it's fully illustrated, a bit like a zine. And it's for young adults, and it's about all the different things that we go through in life and how to potentially create a language around certain things that can be tricky, or certain things that you might want to do that are amazing, you know. And I've got the full gamut in there. Anyway, I went to Katie and I said, I really want an outfit that looks like my book, and my book's bright yellow with sparkly lettering, and it's kind of got this subversive street party canon emoji vibe to it. We worked on a skirt and top combo that I could wear whilst on my yellow bus with my yellow book, which went on tour around the country, and we went to schools and spoke about different subject matters that might affect us. And that is the top of it. So it's kind of based on my book cover.
So it's a kind of uniform.
Yeah.
When you're in open mode, you've got this outfit that you can put on to channel that.
Kind of. And there's all these things that happen quite organically. I try not to overthink them, because I don't feel so comfortable in like an academic intellectual space. But yes.
I love it. Often you wear like really nice independent brands and sustainable brands. People like Irregular Sleep Pattern. I've seen you wear their stuff, and sort of supporting the kind of smaller brands. How do you go about finding people? And yeah, what's your criteria?
I've always had an antenna for really exciting new design. I don't know if that's because I lived in a particular part of London at a particular time, and fashion was like really key to my everyday, like living in amongst magazine culture and trying to be a stylist living in Shoreditch in the noughties, or whether it helps me escape the monotony of conforming. To love clothes, but to be against fast fashion, which I definitely am these days, it's quite a confusing dichotomy. So I do use Instagram or place again. It goes back to that thing that you picked up on in terms of sense of place. I think that finding out who's designing what wherever you live is quite elevating to the experience of where you're living. And a regular sleep pattern I found out about whilst moving to Scotland, and thought what they were doing was really cool. And it was really pertinent to the time to have kind of leisure wear as outerwear. Like I've worked with Mary Benson, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Since Mary was a graduate, somebody turned up to my radio show wearing a t-shirt with an iridescent flower on it. And I was like, who made that? And they said Mary Benson, and that was it. I sought out her studio, and we were making stuff together, and I'd just be like, can I have a jacket that looks like a stained glass window disco ball with a big G on the back for Glastonbury and Gemma? Yeah. And she was like, yeah. And I was like, great. There's certain people that I've connected to or collected in this like broader network over the years that I think probably are the closest that I could come to living in the 70s. And I think Mary Benson is one of them.
Nice. That's the aim, living in the 70s.
In a way, yeah.
Well, from the 70s to the 80s, should we talk about this 80s dress?
Yes, I actually cannot for the life of me remember where this dress is from. It might have been a gift, and if that person gave it to me, please remind me. But I love this dress, and people love it as well. It's about the print, and it's so exciting.
It kind of has a stained glass window vibe,
you think?
Actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of. Because of the slight black outline on the pattern, and it's like very colourful, so it's kind of pinks and blues, yellows, reds, blacks, all sorts.
What is it about that distinct 80s vibe?
Yeah, I think it's that mashup of colours.
There's this movement to the pattern as well that's just so specific of the time. There's shapes or even this kind of like stroke as though design on the computer had just started.
Right, yes.
It's got this sense of excitement about it.
How does it make you feel when you wear it?
I really enjoy it. I sort of bounce in that dress. And people respond to it, like I said, just so nicely. It also photographs really amazingly. It just is the piece.
Yeah.
You don't have to like wear anything else really that's anywhere near as interesting. You can be really neutral and wear that dress. And I mean, what a print, but it's a very special dress. It's a cool piece. And it's so easily in that kind of cliched way, like folded, put into a backpack, and there I go, I'm off on my travels.
Yeah, it's nice to have those trusty friends that you can bring with you, and you know that you'll kind of show up as yourself wherever you are.
Completely. I'll be wearing that to dinner on any of the continents.
Yeah.
And people know who I am.
It feels like it's full of joy.
Yeah.
Do you find that clothes can overturn your mood? Like if you're feeling low, putting on a particular thing can kind of turn that the right way around again.
I know that clothes can change my mood. I've utilized that many times.
Yeah. I imagine having a kind of public persona. You mentioned kind of being on the red carpet, appearing on television, and knowing that you have to kind of perform a particular type of the self. Imagine clothes are quite a good shortcut to that sometimes.
Definitely, particularly in the public aspect of my work, having clothes as armor, as you described before, it is a very tangible and real thing. I DJed at the Lincoln Center, which is in the middle of New York City, for an outdoor public event that was celebrating the Jubilee over in the UK. I was so surprised to be asked. It was an amazing moment. I couldn't really believe it. I'm not hugely royal in terms of a fanatic.
Right.
But I was DJing around a disco ball for a free silent disco in New York City, wearing a Zandra Rhodes special, which was just such an incredible item to wear. We're talking like gold foil, like I was covered in gold folds. And wow. Actually what it did is it turned like this celebration that represents hierarchy, things that disgust me in terms of the treatment of my ancestors, the Union Jack, like almost lambasting like my eyes.
Yeah.
It completely changed that. I was like suddenly a black British person feeling jubilant in New York City in the home of disco. And suddenly like everything was different. Was incredible.
You rewrote that narrative.
Somehow. And like it was the gold dress. It was the British designer, you know, who gets it, who is like one of the most creative, like brilliant minds. It was so many things. It was the shine. It was the, and I always sort of say that disco, if it was a religion, it might be the church that I kind of and can understand. And yeah, it felt like Jubilee celebration was for everybody. And jubilance is something that we can all create within ourselves, and we can do that through a dress.
Should we talk about your final fabric, which is the one with the people?
Oh, yes. Oh, talking of New York, this particular trip, the jubilant trip last year to DJ, and I went to the Jean-Michel Basquiat exhibition. It was a retrospective put together by his family. So it had this really intimate curation. For example, they created his studio. They recreated it. So what it would have been like when he was making work. I found it really, really special. Honestly, I feel like walking through that for an afternoon, it gets under your skin somehow. Mm. Like, you just sort of feel so inspired that I felt like I'd almost had a conversation with him. Mm. You know what I mean? Again, my imagination is rampant. So I walked out beaming. Firstly, like, a family were like, "You look amazing, girl," you know, in that lovelier way in America where people actually like are just sort of a bit more verbose and like, it's out there. It's like, "Oh my God, thanks." And it was a family, an African-American family dressed amazingly of different generations. And the grandma had blue lipstick on.
Excellent.
Literally just like steaming with coolness. Ah, oh, good times, basically. Mm. And then I found the New York City Opera thrift store. And it was the best thrifting I had ever experienced all over the world. Just because the people that want to support the opera have good stuff.
Right. Yes. It's like going to Hampstead
London
or something. Yes. Like, yeah.
They were playing really good music and they had some amazing clothes. And this beautiful sarong, I'm not sure where it would be from originally, but it's so kind of on theme for me to create these stories and feel these emotional connections to the togetherness of women. And there's women on this piece kind of in harmony, it feels like.
Yeah, so I'll describe it briefly. There's it's a sarong or a kind of stretch of fabric, I suppose. You could use in whatever way you like, which has really nice stylized drawings of four women, each wearing a different kind of block color. So there's like a sort of a lemon yellow and a green, and then a kind of bright red and a sort of warm brown color outfit. And then they're all on sort of profiles, so they've got this really nice shape to their hair and noses. It feels like they're having a little conversation.
Yeah.
There's, I mean, to be honest, it feels like the embodiment of your Immortal Sisterhood book in a pattern or in a print. They're gossiping or sharing.
And
I mean, it feels like a painting.
It does. It's a story in a picture on a piece of material.
Yeah.
And I love art within clothing, and it feels like a piece of artwork. It's like what I'm drawn to, this idea that we can somehow uphold one another in unity.
Do you wear it?
I do, yeah. I love the colors. The color palette is so nice to me. It's like really like specific, like the mustards and the, yeah, it feels tropical. And I think, I mean, I live in Edinburgh, which is beautiful, but it's quite a bit posh sometimes. There's lots of royal blue and navy and
It's quite a grey city as well, architecturally. And in kind of a beautiful way, there's a sort of slaty grey feeling. But often if it's overcast as well, there's quite a washout that happens somehow.
Completely. And those are the days where I want to wear the brightest clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up from Margate, where the sky would turn psychedelic coral on a regular basis. Then I came here and the light's completely different. And it's a sort of stately, classical place to be, which does do something for my mind. But I really miss vibrant color. And I seek it and I wear it. And yeah. I try to embody it.
I ask everybody if there's a pattern that got away. Is there something you're kind of chasing or coveting?
This is where I like actually like feel so like fall to my knees thankful, because most of those things I think I actually have.
Oh, that's so nice.
I think I do.
Maybe that comes around to that thing I said about you sort of seizing the moment. I feel like you're someone who hears your instincts and you're like, right, I'm going to buy a double-decker yellow bus. I'm gonna stop the car and get that Ghanaian dress. So like, opportunities don't pass you by.
I don't overthink opportunities. I live by my gut and by my heart. It doesn't mean that I don't make mistakes, but it does mean that I do seize the moment. I love it when I have that eureka moment that I would like to buy and pour love into this item, or remember this moment for all time when I put on this dress, because it was an electrifying moment that I would love everybody to know about and everybody to experience.
I love it. And which of these would you save from a house fire?
Oh, you can't do that to me, Lauren.
Sorry. I'm not setting any fires.
Okay. That is really hard. It probably has to be the 80s number that I can't remember where I got it from, because it just invokes so much joy through others. As well as like me wearing it, people are always like, I love that, I love that. And that's such a nice way to be in the world. That it probably has to be that. But wow, I'm going to be grabbing all of the pieces.
Yeah.
Or heading back to Jamaica to buy a crochet bikini again,
Go around again. You'll just have to like revisit all those places. It could be kind of a nice odyssey.
Oh. Again, you're picking up on like a part of me that is like very real. Like I try not to over lament on objects. I mean, so yeah, I would go. I feel like my life is like an odyssey, and I feel so lucky to be able to feel like that. I really do. And I just really wish it for everybody.
That's so nice. Such a lovely note to end on as well.
Yeah, but don't even overthink it. Don't overthink it. Like, it is in our gut. Like, our intuition is, like, so there for us. And if it says, literally, yes to the dress, then, you know, give it a go.
Hear it, yeah. Yeah, so nice. Thank you so much, Gemma. This has been magic.
That was truly quite magic. Like a lovely transcendental. I love talking about clothes. I love talking about colour. I like sort of went off into a dream space.
It's fabulous. Thank you so much, Gemma.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Pattern Portraits. That's season one, wrapped up and done. It's been such a lovely project to work on, and I've had such rich and inspiring conversations with all the guests. I'm really looking forward to working on season two, so do stay tuned, because that will be coming at some point in the not too distant future. If you've enjoyed the podcast and want to support it, a really nice way of supporting it is to buy one of the prints. Each episode has a print that accompanies it. So do take a look on my website, laurengodfrey.co.uk. You can find a link to the shop there where you can see all of the prints that are available. And each one is £75. It's a responsibly printed Gicle print on Hanamula bamboo paper. So they've got a real rich, gorgeous, juicy colour quality to them, which I think really captures the vibrancy of the patterns that we've spoken about. Thank you so much for being along for the ride. It's been so fun. Thanks. Bye.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers.
With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.